Groovies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Yes, it is time for Movies and Booze. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Serena Bellissimo, Brian Lloyd and Leslie Williams. Lovely to see you all.
You too, Tom.
And Leslie, you've brought kind of very cool glasses.
Well, I think
they're cool anyway.
I always bring cool glasses. So I traditionally have brought real tumblers, but this time I've brought tumblers from, I will mention the shop, TK Maxx.
Yeah.
20 quid for four glasses. They're Polish crystal or something. And I break these a lot less often because of the stems. There is a trick, though. I should actually bring one of these in. I've recently broken some glasses, good Riedel glasses, with stems.
And Very easy to do.
Yes, but what you do is the stem is still intact and the glass is still intact and there's a bit of glass sticking between the two. So you hollow out a cork at either end and the cork will basically hold the two pieces together.
I wouldn't say that looks great at dinner parties.
But it has a certain... Je ne sais, charm.
Je ne sais, can't afford another glass.
Yeah. Well, it's just a 25 euro glass, didn't want to throw that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm 100% on that. That's why we have our nice ones.
Yes.
But we have our very cheap ones as well.
Yes.
Which I don't mind if they
but
go
like
to God.
Things are meant to be used, no?
Yeah, sure. Not meant to be broken.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brian. You've got to use them. If they break, you have a story behind it.
Yeah, there you go.
They break all the time.
That's a skill issue.
But you know why I like these glasses?
Why?
These tumbler glasses. I'm going to give away one of my state secrets now. Little late at night, wife may slip off to bed a bit early.
You want a little snifter?
I'll have a little sly glass of red. And if you leave the next morning, a wine glass is out. It's very obvious there's a bit of crime here.
But this could be water.
Could be water. Easier to rinse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I no problem. You're breaking into a rash though, Serena. These are bringing you back.
Because they just remind me of like when I was younger, my parents weren't ahead of the curve, right? They just didn't have wine glasses and they used like little tumbler glasses to pour their wine into.
Yeah.
So now I look
could've
at that.
Could have been worse. Could have been jam jars, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's
nothing wrong
too,
with jam jars either. Yeah. Nothing wrong. I'm sure many people listening to this group with the old jam jar of wine. Well,
the simplest way to know if you've got a decent wine glass, and even if you want to use a tumbler, thin rims. A thin rim makes all the difference. That's why we all hate Paris goblets.
No mug?
But mugs are not good. So Paris goblets was the glass, if anybody remembers the 80s and 90s, that was a squat glass with sort of a very round bowl and a very shallow bowl. And we call them Paris goblets. And they're too thick. They're way too thick. Wine just does not seem to hit right in them, you know. Riedel made all their money by claiming that the glass will hit your mouth in a different place and will taste different for different... Look,
are
I don't know. They do this
serious?
Blind, They do this blind tastings, and they make you drink out of a plastic cup, and then the same wine out of and it tastes better in a plastic cup because it's the wrong glass.
Or is that
it's some of it's psychological.
The placebo effect?
I mean, and it's quite funny because it was all based on this map of the tongue, this famous map of the tongue.
That was like phrenology, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was exactly. It was in every wine book, but it turned out
the head shape and size.
Well, these same claim that certain parts of the tongue tasted different things, and so the wine glass was designed to push the wine depending on the wine. Like, so you might want to emphasize the more salt with the maybe a fino sherry. Anyway, it turns out this study of the map of the tongue was based on one lecturer in one class did an hour-long test with about seven students, and it was all based on that. And it was in every wine book for years. And then there's still a certain amount of truth to it, to elements of part you're rambling here.
But you would say that it does taste nicer.
The good wine glass makes a difference.
Like Coke out of a can versus Coke out of a bottle.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah. No, really.
Because my daughter has just gone into the Coke from the bottle phase and thinking this tastes vastly superior to everything.
But she thinks it's better from a bottle.
100%.
Oh, no, wrong.
I like it from a can too.
Like can supremacy. Can supremacy. I need the metallic taste. That's half of it.
So do you not see what I love to do? My favourite thing to do is to get some Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Get a gorgeous wine glass, fill it with
I like that too. Yes.
And pour it into that. Yeah. And then I feel like
so I can't
super
do
posh.
Beer out of a bottle. I'm sorry, no, give me a glass. I cannot do because you can't
what do you
smell
mean?
It. I will not ever drink beer out of a bottle. Even if it's the crappiest lager. I need a glass. I'm sorry, I need a glass.
Yeah, and like a lovely bottle.
No. Cannot do it. It's to do with the fact that I taste beer for a living and I need to be able to have the smell, unless it's something...
But don't you have it straight from the bottle?
No, I hate it. No, I just can't do it.
What about like a Corona? like with the
No, I ask. Lime. I will always ask for. In fact, I just.
And you ask for ice as well?
No, God, no, Jesus, no! You can't put ice in beer. No. Sorry, I will. I've been mentioning Riedel a lot. I'm going to also mention one other glass company, Zalto. Oh my God, they are the best glasses. I prefer them.
Why?
But because they are incredibly thin. I mean, they are. They don't feel like any weight.
I love that wonkiness.
So Searson's in Monkstown have them. They're 35, 40 euros a glass.
Point.
I mean, but
glass.
They are. But they are, and I have broken a few, which is not.
Oh, Jesus.
But they are so nice. So the Riedel also have these really fine glasses as well, but you've got to go for the premium Riedel.
Yeah.
I'll stay away
from them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with one of our listeners who says, my partner and I have matching Nutella jar glasses.
Oh, that's cute.
They're not the worst.
Have they got their names on them?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
We have stemless wine glasses.
Yeah,
they're a real joy.
Yeah,
or maybe that's just because I'm drinking wine.
That's what I mean by tumblers, is stemless wine glasses.
So stemless wine. I'm going to call all of our glasses now stemless wine glasses. Ask me that stemless wine glass.
I like that.
I will say. So what movie world are we going into today?
Right, so we have a very funny American, but could be easily a French sex comedy called Splitsville. And then we have No Ordinary Heist, which is this Irish thriller based on the 2004 Northern Bank robbery with Eddie Marsden and Anna Hardwick.
Good. And that has Eddie Marsden. Yeah, I love Eddie Marsden.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he does a really good Northern Irish accent in this as well. I wasn't expecting it at all. It's very, very authentic. But yeah, it was based on the 2004 Northern Irish bank robbery. 26.5 million
the
stolen.
Northern Bank one, yeah.
Northern Bank, yeah. Sorry, what am I saying? Yeah, Northern Bank robbery. And like, it's gas, like, it's only recently as well, like in the state papers in 2025, there was a big disclosure about one of the people that was involved in it. So like, this was, you know, 21 years ago and we're still talking about it to this day. So
right. I very often just watch the trailers for these things in preparation for this. That's an art form, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, no, my God. And especially as well, and I'm going to really show my age now, on TikTok, some of the edits that I have seen for certain films are incredible. Yeah. And what I'm actually doing now is I'm selling my wife on really old films. Like, I was trying to get her to watch Sorcerer the other day, the William Friedkin one. And she was like, oh, I hate old soul films. And I was like, no. Look at this trailer. Showed it to her. And she was like, okay, I'll watch that. And sold. She was totally in on it. So, yeah, like, trailers are absolutely an art form, especially as well. You know, like taking, like I even saw one of like Barry Lyndon set to 3-6 Mafia, which is like, I'll show it to you during the break. Yeah. It is hilarious how well they do it. So, yeah.
I will say one thing. If you were judging the film on the trailer, you'd give everything 5 out of 5.
Oh, you would. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole, like there's an entire art form. Like, I've seen like the rough cuts of them where they literally have come up on screen. Tension, rising, climax, star one, star two. Like, they really do have like a formula to it and stuff. Like, a mate of mine is working on this Hong Kong action film at the minute called The Furious, and he edited the film, but he had to hand off the entire film to specific trailer editors who were going to make up the whole thing for him, like, because it's so specific an art form. And I do believe it's an art form. There's emotional content.
They look amazing.
Yeah.
What will we be drinking to get us through all of that?
So we are drinking Portuguese wines.
And beautiful.
Just remind people once again that Portugal is a country with fascinating grape varieties, none of which you've ever heard of, or very, very, I'd be surprised if you've heard of any of them. And we all go there on holidays and we all enjoy the wine when we go on. I think per head of population, more Irish people go on holidays to Portugal than any other country goes to Portugal.
Fine.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I have a white and I have a red. Both actually imported by Grace Campbell Wines. An importer I've never brought on before. And I'm a huge fan of Michael Bryan's wines and his predecessor, who he still works with. So I have a red. I have a Daum. That's how you pronounce it. Not Dow, we would all say, but Daum is how you pronounce it.
All right.
And I've another Averino. I was going to go. What?
I'll let you say it.
Yeah. Yes, so I've an Alvarinho, which is what your Portuguese call Alvarinho, and is the origin of the grape. It doesn't originate in Galicia, Alvarinho, which is what we drink masses of. But just to remind people that there is a really good version in Portugal called Alvarinho.
Very good. Are they slightly better value than.
Yeah, they are.
That's good.
Yeah.
will be interested in that. Serena, as we look at your interesting stories from the world of, I can't put over how many things are reboots.
I'm so over the reboots. I want originality back.
As we look down ahead of us, we will be talking about Grey's Anatomy. We'll be talking about Murder, She Wrote. We'll be talking about The X-Files.
13
Jamie
going
Lee
on 30.
Curtis for Murder, She Wrote. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm jumping the gun, but like, I don't see it.
I don't, right? And because that was announced probably back in, was it 2023, 2024, yeah. They were doing Freakier Friday and she accidentally let the cat out of the bag. Yeah. But the more she goes on and does these press junkets, the more quirky she's becoming. I think she's setting herself up for Angela Lansbury. Yeah. Nobody can set themselves up for Angela Lansbury, but for Jessica Fletcher. Sure. So we'll be talking a bit about that.
Okay. I think she can. I think she's brilliant.
You think?
Yeah, I'd watch her in any rubbish.
Do you know, actually?
In any rubbish.
Which is the greatest praise I can give somebody. I don't care how bad this is. Yeah.
It's an iconic, like, I mean, you couldn't imagine anyone else playing Columbo. Even though Simon Delaney told me once he was in the running for a reboot.
I could see Simon Delaney.
I could see him doing it. It was the only time I heard it was like, oh yeah, I could see him doing that. Yeah.
We also have to remember there's a certain generation that has no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And may just go, I'll give this a go because I know her from Freakier Friday.
Yeah. Will they do an Irish, do you remember she used to do these Irish
That's
episodes?
Right, yeah. She ended up in Ireland.
Why?
Right? Her kids were basically like, were like nearly taken in by the Mansons. Like the Manson family. Yeah. That's a whole thing. Like she literally got her kids out of LA because Charles Manson had his hooks into her kids and she had to get them out of LA.
So she brought them here?
Brought them here.
Wow. We haven't even started into the showbiz news and that's already absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
My God.
They had really bad, like, I mean, it was terrible. Like, I mean, we're saying like that's me. Like, they had really bad drug problems and stuff like that. Yeah. But it was mainly like, apparently they were worried about Charles Manson.
Right. As you would be.
Wow.
Involved in it, yeah.
So actually the first story you want to tell us is about Bridgerton. Now I have to warn you about Bridgerton. I was told not to watch it. I was told there was too much sex in it and I wouldn't enjoy it.
I don't know. This whole too much sex, not really.
Nope.
Like, there's some steamy scenes and stuff, but I feel like as the seasons have gone on, it's become less about the sex. And like this season was all like a Cinderella story. I was just like, and there was maybe one steamy scene.
Yeah.
But season 5 is going to be about Francesca and Michaela.
Right.
So this season, if you haven't seen it, sorry, spoiler alert, but this season, Francesca Bridgerton actually lost her husband, John Sterling. Next season, she goes home. It's 2 years on. She goes back to Scotland, where they're from, and she's missing him. But his cousin Michaela's there. They share this forbidden kiss, and it becomes a big storyline. And the fans are really, really excited.
Right. I'm trying to struggle for questions to ask you in relation to this. I feel it's more of a sad reflection on me.
Not at all.
You're not missing anything.
So I did see in my notes here that Michaela, there's a gender swap going on there.
This is based on the book called, Julia Quinn's book called When He Was Wicked. So it was about two men in her book, but this now is two females. So you've got Francesca, you've got Michaela. I do love that Michaela's actually read the book and she's so excited and can't wait to film this. And like a lot of the fans, they're hoping that we, you know, get out of England and move to the Scottish Highlands because it'll be beautiful, it'll be scenic, and there'll be a lot of horse riding. Sorry, had to stop myself there.
You mean in the literal sense, not in the metaphorical sense?
In all senses of the words. Michaela has actually said that she hopes that there's this one scene in the book where Michael is on horseback in the rain and he runs away into this cabin and I really, really want to be into it. Without spoiling it too much, the scene does lead to one of the novel's steamiest encounters.
Steamy. So, do you know, two words keep going through my mind. Julie Cooper.
Julie Cooper. Yeah.
Penny Vincennes as well, yeah, and Danielle Steele, and
Yeah. Except it's
Rivals, isn't that
right? Rivals is fabulous.
That was great stuff.
Hopefully, we get that back soon.
Yeah, it's like May, I believe. Yeah, it's next month.
Very lampoonable as well, I would imagine.
Well, see, this is the
Lady of the House.
Well,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, but do you know what? Rivals doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah,
sometimes I find that Bridgerton does take itself that little bit too seriously. So anyway, if you're a fan, season 5 has just started filming.
I have a feeling I've avoided it this long.
You're not going into season 5, are you?
And then 13 going on 30. This is a classic movie, isn't it?
Do you know, even my 14-year-old daughter turned to me and went, what is this and why are they remaking it? And I'm just like, we said at the top of the show, you know, sometimes things need to be remade because there's a generation that knows nothing about it.
Yeah.
The younger generation knows 13 going on 30. It's a classic for a reason. Mm. Just because something's popular does not mean we need to remake it. Now, Jennifer Garner has come on as an executive producer and people are excited about that. I'm just like, no, please.
Well, they should have stopped making the Freakier Friday things as well. I'm sorry. We tried watching that Freakier Friday with, and I had to be stopped after 10 minutes.
Really?
I hated it.
I didn't find that too. But at least, do you know what? At least with Freakier Friday, they still had the same cast.
Yeah.
It was just like an extension. So if they tried to do the same thing as Freakier Friday, where it was her daughter now who's 13 and she's 14 going on 40, right? I just find this, I think the production studio is more excited about this than fans.
Anyone else
is. Because everyone else is just going, can we just leave some classics alone? We don't need this to be remade.
And Jennifer Garner was like the reason that film was so good.
She
was
exactly.
So good.
And Mark Ruffalo.
So good. And Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo.
And Judy Greer. Or Judy.
Yeah. Judy Greer. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's the cast that made that film. No one else is gonna do it.
And see, this is a thing, right? So in years gone by, these movies probably would have been lost because if you didn't have the DVD, if you didn't have the VHS, it just disappeared. They are on all the streaming services. The fact that my 14-year-old knows this film says to you, you've already hit the generations that you need to be hitting. Leave it alone.
Just too much time on their hands, these studios.
They want to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
And I hope this backfires. No offence to anyone involved in this, but like sometimes, can we just have some originality?
But I mean, just driving through Rathmines and there's a sign up saying, Supergirl is coming and The Mummy is coming. I mean, like,
have they not already been?
The Mummy, I'll argue with you on The Mummy, right? Just because, first of all, it's an Irish director, Lee Cronin. Yeah, okay. So I'll just say that. But also as well, The Mummy, you know, that is...
It's a genre in and of itself.
So like you can just, it's open to reinterpretation.
Okay. Fair enough.
Constant
The Mummy is coming again.
Yeah.
So what film, if going back to the modern world and real things that didn't exist previously, what are we going to look to?
I'd say let's start with Splitsville.
Splitsville, okay. Big nod through the window. Splitsville after the break, please. Back after this.
Paul, you're so f***ing full of shit. You had me. You had me and you wanted to f*** other people.
No, I didn't.
But you did.
No, I didn't.
Why are you lying to me? You just said that you weren't going to lie to me.
I'm not. I'm not.
Okay, I'm just going to clarify the question just so that there's no confusion here. When we were married, did you ever sleep with anyone else?
No.
What the fuck, Paul? Then why were we in an open relationship?
Because. Look at you. Look at me. I have no business being with a woman as incredible as you, but... somehow I convinced you to be with me.
I chose to be with you.
Yeah, well, maybe I was scared that one day you'd wake up and choose not to be with me. You know, realize you can do better and you can find someone way more f***ing interesting and handsome, clearly. I figured if I made it okay, then you'd have one less reason to leave me.
Well, that all sounds very heated, Brian, I must say.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a comedy to me.
No, I mean, it has, it's, I would say this is like, yes, it's an American film and all the rest of it, but to me, I was watching this, this felt in its DNA very, very French, very, very European, because for one, it's about, we're going to get a text about this, it's all about infidelity. It's all about open marriages and polygamy and polyamory and all the rest of it. And may I ask the room a question, right?
Yeah, go on, yeah.
And you don't have to name names.
Nervously.
Do you know anybody that's in an open marriage?
I do.
No.
Okay, right. Well, I'm the weirdo then. But like,
no,
I was watching.
We know.
Well, no, where? Do you know what I mean?
Well, they haven't told us anyway.
Well, they haven't told us.
They haven't invited me any. I've not been invited, sadly.
With the little bowl and the key.
Yeah, bring wine.
Yeah. Hey! But no, I mean, what I found was I was watching this film was that there is a frankness to it.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you know, they're very upfront about it. Like, yep, we're in an open marriage. It's happening. We're doing this, et cetera, et cetera. What's going on is Kyle Marvin is married to Adria Arjona. They have a near-death experience in a car. She then, in a kind of a fit of sort of radical honesty, she's like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I want to get divorced. And again, this frankness is that she's like, well, look, we don't have money and we don't have kids, so we can end the marriage very quickly. Which is true, because I know someone that has gone through a divorce and didn't have money and didn't have kids and they were Like, right. done, they're out and gone. Whereas people that do have a kid and do have money in it and or have at least assets or something, it can be a lot more kind of complicated. Of and the film, again, is quite, you know, upfront about this, that, you know, marriage and divorce is completely different based on your social circumstances sure. and your class structure and all the rest of it. But it's, you know, it was a very, like, it's a very funny film in parts. Like, there are certain scenes in it where it goes straight to, you know, slapstick comedy, where, for example, Kyle Marvin and Michelangelo Cavino, who's the writer and director and star in this, get into this big scrap when he admits that he slept with his wife because he thought they were in an open marriage, you know? And then there's other scenes in it where it's, you know, very, like, they're, like, very, very dramatic and very, you know, on the nose and very upfront about things. It's an adult comedy in every sense of the word, in the sense of it's quite, you know, it's quite explicit. I mean, there are, like, I think it's, like, 16, I think, if Ifco gave it.
Okay.
But then as in how it kind of, again, the bluntness of it, the frankness of it, and the sort of the laissez-faire attitude that everyone has, again, is very adult and might not necessarily kind of sit well. But I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? It was very well done. And again, we're talking about, like, you know, original stories and original. Like,
yeah.
This is completely original. I have very not good. Seen an American film like this ever that has this. You've seen a lot of French films
yeah.
that are like this, but definitely not an American film that has this kind of mentality.
For whatever reason, the word sideways keeps going through my
head. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, similar vibes. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I don't know if it has the same kind of acidic wit
yeah.
that Alexander Payne has, but again, very funny in parts, very, you know, emotional in parts. It's worth a watch.
Okay,
it's
very
worth
good.
Watch, yeah.
And I love the French take on it as well. What are you giving it a five? Three to five, very good. Before we go to our next wine, just a few of our texts coming in. When you pour beer into a glass, it becomes less gassy as the head forms and therefore you can taste more of the beer.
There you go. Thank you. Validation.
Okay. Yeah.
Not to mention the bloating which occurs when drinking from a bottle. I have to say, I find drinking from a bottle, especially an ice cold bottle, fantastically cool, and I love it. And it's just the weather's got to be right.
I've tried it. I've been given bottles, and I've thought I can do this, and I've not been able to get past a sip, and had to go asking for a glass.
Yeah, right.
It's a psychological thing with me, and maybe it's to do with the fact that I smell and taste things all the time.
No, you're on a different level to the rest of us. So we have to admit, you know. Now, that was, by the way, that was from Dave in Galway. Says he's drinking. He's drinking from a cereal bowl at the moment. I bought 4 Xalto glasses at €45 each,
yeah.
and only had one mouthful. I knocked it off the table.
Never took the other three out again.
No. They're still hidden in a cabinet.
Oh, that's funny.
Do you know what? That's just as bad as the broken. I'm with Brian. Just as bad as the broken one. Because if you're not using them because you're scared of breaking them,
what's the value? Like,
I don't use them all the time, but I look forward to using them. And
you're having a dinner party or something like that.
There's the Universal, which is for everything, and then there's the Bordeaux, which is a particularly nice one, and then the gorgeous Burgundy one, which is really big and really easy to break.
Yeah.
But weirdly, I've only broken the standard. I've never broken any of the Bordeaux or Burgundy ones. But I have broken the standard ones because maybe they're a little cheaper.
They're going to break. On Bridgerton, fans of the novels are not excited. They are angry about the gender swap as it diminishes Francesca's fertility struggles.
I did read that bit, and they're still. That's not to say that same sex couples don't have fertility problems.
Very
they
true.
Do. So one of the producers actually came out and said, we are going to touch on the fertility struggles.
Brilliant.
So
okay, very good. We're on to our first one, it's this lovely white one.
Yeah. So Quinta d'Elixir, Pusso Comum. Pusso Comum, Alvarinho. So Alvarinho is the original grape that became Alvarinho. So this is from the Minho region of Portugal, or actually Vinho Verde. People think Vinho Verde is a wine style, which it kind of is, but it's also the wine region. It's the wine region north of Porto, basically. So Porto is in the Douro wine region, and then north of that is Vinho Verde, and then you hit the river Minho, and then you are in Galicia, basically. So if you're standing in the vineyards of Galicia in Alvarinho country, or Orazal, for example, you can see into Portugal. You're just across the border.
Sure.
So there was a thought that this was, and actually says it on the back of the bottle, which is really kind of annoying. They should know better. It says, oh, it's from Gaulish monks brought it over. And these think that was to do with albar being a Latin word for white and white. No, it's a native grape from Portugal. And if you look in the Encyclopedia of Wine Grapes, it says, if you look up Albarino, it says C. Albarino because it came from Portugal. It's the original grape. And we in Ireland are the third biggest consumer of Albarino in the world. Like, as in, we drink more than Germany. We drink more. UK and US beat us. But
what does that say about us?
It says we like, yeah. I mean, and it's extraordinary.
Or it's but on the top shelf at a reasonable price.
And to get good ones.
That one.
I will say that some Albarino can still be amazing. And there's some gorgeous ones. But it has been dumbed down a lot because it's so popular. You can just put Albarino on the label. And Albarino is still a lot less known. And you will often get better bang for your buck if you buy Albarino. This is a gorgeous peachy, fresh. There's a little, actually, if you look in the glass, there's a little tiny, tiny, not quite a spritz, but a zing to it. It is in Independence. It's in Matson's in Cork. It's in number 21's in Cork. It's in the Touche Wines. It's in
Pinto.
Pinto Wines, thank you. A great Portuguese owned wine shop in just opposite Bertie Hearn's old pub, if you know there.
Oh, yeah.
On the canal there. Yeah. Great, great, great shop.
And he's always in there. Is he every time you go into Fagan's, he's in there propping up the bar. Every time I've been in there.
Why do I not believe you?
I live in Drumcondra. I walk the dog past it every day. I see him.
Yeah, go on.
And close
on,
it to home, Fallon Burn. So imported by Grace.
Sad over that. Moving on. Have you tried that over there?
I did, and I really like it. It actually makes me feel like I'm on holidays. Mm. And it feels like, am I supposed to be seeing like bubbles in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there's just a no, it's just... It's brand new. It's 2024 vintage, so it's only hit the shelves.
Oh, it's not a criticism.
No.
It's actually quite nice.
But it's only just hit the shelves. I mean, it's only like the wine would only have been released 6 months after. Well, 2024. Okay, so that's a year, isn't it? Sorry, my apologies. But even still, it's still no, it's not a criticism. I mean, it's absolutely fine to have that little.
It's lovely.
It hasn't been injected with carbon dioxide, which some wineries will do to give a wine their wine freshness. It's just that's the nature of the grape. It's really loads and loads of acidity. That's just classic, and it's. One of the reasons why this grape grows so well over there is, or why they use this grape is because the skins are quite thick, and that's what gives you your peachy things, more terpenes in the skins, basically, which is flavour molecules. But then the freshness. In Galicia, that's particularly important because the sea breezes coming in would damage a Sauvignon or something like that. But even here, there's a bit of sea influence and so on. But I mean, look,
it's delicious.
Not knocking Albarino, but honestly, give Albarino a go. And I think this is a really good example. Grace Campbell Wines bring it in, and that'll be relevant when I get to our next wine, actually.
Okay, great.
Good small importer.
Do you want a little drop?
No, please. I'm good, because I have to make space now for my red.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much for being concerned.
I'm just I'm right
there.
Here.
That's all right. That's
You did seem to be kind of lingering a little bit longer than bottle.
It's very, very nice.
One more sentence on
Portuguese. I know you're on holiday too soon. Sorry.
One more sentence on Portuguese. Portuguese white wines are completely overlooked, and you've never heard of these grape varieties. Okay, Alvarinho you may have come across, but you've probably never heard of Arinto, Antamvage, Rupero, Encruzado. There's a load of them, and they're really, really high quality and really interesting and not dumbed down.
Sure. Absolutely beautiful. Look forward to the next one to come. But we did mention Jamie Lee Curtis being in Murder, She Wrote. It's 2027. That's still a bit of a way off, but it's a bit, they're very big shoes to step into, aren't they?
Yeah, and it is happening, right? Yeah. So as
they're doing it, like they're really not
Well, they've actually put out a date, December 22nd, 2027. So there was talk of a reboot while Jessica, why do I keep calling Jessica Fletcher? Because that's how everyone knows it. While Angela Lansbury was alive. Interestingly enough, and see, I think she would have done a great job. Octavia Spencer was linked to playing Jessica's
Fletcher. Could see that.
You could, couldn't you? More so than Jamie Lee, I think. But at the time, Angela turned around and actually went, I don't like this idea, because NBC were committing to filming a pilot, so it wasn't even going to be a film. It was actually going to be a TV series. And when she found out that it wasn't going to take place, Angela Lansbury was thrilled. She's like, there's only one Jessica Fletcher. She died in 2022.
Sure.
So I think they've left enough time.
She had that much say, though, did she? That her kind of...
I think so, because do you know what? I think if she came out and said, I don't support this, she has such a cult-like fan basis.
Yeah.
People love her. And she was like, nah. Now, she wouldn't purposefully go out and put the kibosh on it, but if Jessica Fletcher is not liking Jessica Fletcher, then they're going to go, no, we're not going to this. But, yeah, it looks like now we are getting 2027. We're getting Jamie Lee Curtis, who's really excited about this. I don't know. And are they still going to? As I said, I think she would be great, but I don't know.
It's a bit, no, come on, it's an iconic character. It's like you can't imagine anyone else playing Harrison, or you can't imagine anyone else playing Indiana Jones.
I'm interested that you brought up Indiana Jones because, you know, when they had Shia LaBeouf and they had the son or grandson.
Yeah, it was
the
son, yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder, will Jamie Lee Curtis be a sister or a daughter? Like, will there be a little connection where she's still called Jessica Fletcher, but she's not the Jessica Fletcher? Yeah. Like, we don't know anything about the script or anything. So
she's got to earn the bob, like. She's got to earn the haircut, like.
Yeah. Like, and I wonder, will they give her the haircut? Like, will they try and make her that little bit?
She's been short-haired for a while.
So will they make her that little bit?
I think she's she's such a developed character herself.
That's it.
Yeah. She's kind of the same thing in everything, isn't she? She's Jamie Lee Curtis.
I don't know about that. I mean, would you still think she's Laurie Strode? Like, you know, that kind of way when you watch her in True Lies? No, they're very, like, I do
but
think.
But as of late, I think she's playing into that character.
Oh, 100%.
I think so. The Scarpetta.
Can
thing
I confess that
we
fast-forwarded through her scenes in The Bear because they were just unwatchable.
Oh, I love her in The Bear.
Oh, I just couldn't cope with
her.
It was just too much. I just
it's exhausting.
It was exhausting watching her. Yeah,
I get that.
I just found her too much.
Right. Well,
is Scarpetta good, by the way?
I don't think so.
Did you watch it?
I can't.
I've only watched one episode, and I know it's stopping me here. It's Nicole Kidman as usual.
Yeah,
but really
can't watch her in things. It's always Nicole Kidman.
It's upsetting.
Yeah.
It's like Jeff Goldblum, like that. Like, you just see him and it's like, it's Jeff Goldblum pretending to be, you know, a doctor.
My latest vehicle. Here we go.
This is it. I'm in it now.
No,
yeah,
not working.
Okay, I get that.
And then, as we say, Grey's Anatomy is still on.
I can't believe
it. I thought it was a reboot, but it's not. It's actually still on.
It is still on. But after 18 years, Kevin McKidd, who plays Owen Hunt, is hanging up his boots. And so is Kim Raver, who plays Dr. Teddy Altman. She's been there for 16 years, and they both put out Instagram posts during the week to say, we have loved playing these characters. They've been such an important part of our lives, but it's time to move on. 18 and 16 years later.
Yeah. A lot of people won't know they were still in it or that they were moving on.
But do you know what the interesting thing is about Grey's Anatomy? So it's a type of show. I have to put my hand up. I was a massive fan.
So many people to music they wouldn't otherwise have heard.
True. And but that is a good point. But also, I can still, like, I probably haven't watched it in about 3 or 4 years, but if I turn it on,
you can go right into it.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like, you know, even though the characters and changed, you sort of get the gist of
it's
stuff.
A procedural.
And,
it's like, yeah, it's a procedural. Yeah. Like, it's a good old fashioned episodic television where you can just drop in. It's like, yep, I know what's going
and
on
they
here.
They are very satisfying.
Aren't they?
Yeah. Yes,
when they're done well, they are so satisfying. Yeah. I like Star Trek is the one I'll always point to. Like,
really?
No. Next Generation. Don't knock it. Every time you go in, you've got the captain, you've got the first officer. They're on a planet, like that's planet of the week, and that's it. And it's the same with Grey's Anatomy. It's like patient of the week. What's going on here?
Totally. Yeah, 100%. Love it.
When it's done right, there is something so satisfying about, you know, professional writers and professional actors knowing their role and just, you know, a self-contained story.
I mean, you know where you stand in relation to all that as well.
100%.
Very satisfying. Bring it on. Okay. Right, we are going to talk about the X-Files. They're back.
There we go. Yeah. This one I'm excited about.
Okay, take it away then, because
we're going to have a break. Okay. We're going to have our second movie and a second wine, but then we will talk about the X-Files. What are we going to go for now?
We have M.O.B., and it is Morera Olazabal e Borges, a Daum wine. But I kind of like the fact that this is called MOB because the importer's name is Michael O'Brien.
Oh, man. It sounds like a mob wine. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
It says MOB in big writing. So three producers actually from the Douro, which is the north of the, decided to invest in the Daum region, south of Porto. So it's traditional grapes. You're in the shadows of Sierra de Estrela, which is Portugal's largest mountain. So you've got a bit of altitude, which is good for grapes. The JN is the local grape, which you wouldn't know. You may have come across Touriga Nacional, which is one of the most common grapes you find in Port and in Douro. And then there's also Alfrochero, which is another, again, people don't know these grapes. So Touriga Nacional would be the one red grape from Portugal. Most people, if they'd heard of a grape from Portugal, it would be the one. So just lovely, dark, dark fruits, lovely intensity. It's, I think, phenomenal value for what it is. It's 13.5%, and that's to do with the altitude. So it's not one of your 15% wines. So often these days we're finding wines that are 14.5%, 15%. This has just got lovely depth and roundness, nice, and dark lovely fruits and creaminess. I just think it's really, really tasty. This is in Fianella, which is a new wine shop in, it's open 6 months now, in Phibsborough. Brand new shop, a really cool shop. It is in some of the places I mentioned earlier.
Pinto.
Yeah, I think
you're very good
at
remembering Pinto.
Yeah,
I've just it's the shop that I get sent to buy wine from my wife.
Right, that's how
it
is.
Yeah, so Pinto, Latouche, Greystones, Higgins Clonsky, Blackrock Cellars, Martin's Fairview, Nolan's Clontarf, Fianella in Frisborough. Great, they have a little wine bar as well. Actually, great, really cool shop. And anyone who's eaten in Chapter One, they'll know the sommelier from there. And anyone who's eaten in Hawksmoor will know the sommelier from there because they're a married couple and they've opened up a little wine shop with a little wine bar. So anyway, it's a cool place. And the coach has some Ballantyre.
Very good.
So yeah,
it's excellent. Gorgeous. You enjoy that?
Oh, that Serena, is beautiful.
Yeah. It's nice. Yeah, no, really lovely, lovely, weighty.
Do you know, it's a perfect Friday night, put your feet up type wine.
Welcome to my world. So we're going to have our second movie now. We're going to go straight to our second clip.
This will be a very swift operation.
All right.
You will evade security, fill three cages with cash, and bring them to us. Answer the phones when we call.
Even the base!
Listen to me. You have a very simple choice to make here, boss. Cooperate, and your man will be fine. Don't, she'll be dead. Simple.
Please don't hurt my wife.
Mrs. Murray, I'm afraid there's been an accident.
That's up to you, bank manager. We're very serious people. And we're very serious about what will happen. Your job is to keep each other's loved ones alive. Let's get this done.
Well, they sound like very threatening individuals going on there, no ordinary heist. It sounds very exciting and edge of seat stuff. And yet, it wasn't really
it. It was not, unfortunately. I think the problem that I had with this film is that because it has such a narrow focus, because it just focuses in on Eddie Marsden and Anna Hardwick, and it's just about the sort of the pressure cooker. I mean, if you don't know, what essentially happened was it was one of these like tiger raids where they kidnapped in Eddie Marsden's wife, played by Ava Birtthistle, and then they kidnapped Anna Hardwick's mother and held them hostage until they completed the robbery. Like, if you remember the Northern Bank robbery, like, I mean, that had huge, huge political fallout. It nearly derailed the peace process. There was accusations that the Provisional IRA were involved in all the rest of it. Yet in this film, completely, the political context completely excised.
No.
It is, exactly. Why would you do that?
That's the whole point.
That's the whole, thank you. That is the whole point.
You feel
point.
Vindicated now? Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
I can
because
tell.
I was watching, I was like, okay, there is something interesting here. Like, you have like the context around it. Think of like Dog Day Afternoon, for example. You have the context around it. And like, okay, if you're going to just keep it about the heist, you have to be more smarter than this. Look at Inside Man. Look at the Taken of Pelham 1-2-3, the original Walter Matthau. There's got to be something kind of like keeping you fixed in. And unfortunately, I felt that this didn't have it. And I have to talk about the title. It's a terrible title for a film. No Ordinary Heist. It's actually quite ordinary. Like, it's
right.
It's just straight away, it was like, we'll see about that. And then you watch it and it's like, this is a very ordinary heist. They're just trying to get the money out of the bank. You know, like
again, a sensational promo for the promo.
Oh, no, yeah, again, fantastic. And I would say, look, you know, give it a shot. I think Eddie Marsden is a great actor. Really, really underrated.
Love
him. Yeah, great. Like, great character actor. Like, you do, like, he's like of the Bob Hoskins DNA.
Totally.
Yeah, really, like, really gritty actor. Yeah. Doesn't get enough credit. Anna Hardwick as well, fantastic. Thought he was great in Saipan. Loved him in Saipan. Think he's a great upcoming talent. Give it a shot, maybe. But yeah, it didn't.
Sure.
Kinda,
okay,
it didn't,
fair enough. Out of five for this?
2.5 out of 5.
2.5, all right. We mentioned X-Files, Clarina.
Just
and,
really quickly. Yeah, Ryan.
Back. Oh, you have a bit of time.
Ryan Coogler is involved. He started talking about this back in 2023. He approached the original creator, Chris Carter, and says, I have an idea of rebooting the series. I want to do it with a diverse cast. The first casting we knew of was Danielle Deadwyler. If you're watching Rooster right now, which is on Sky, and now it's Steve Carell's new TV show.
Yeah.
That's where Danielle Deadwyler is in.
Deadweiler.
Thank you. I knew I got it wrong.
The college professor one.
Yeah. So that's her. They've announced her partner. He is Himesh Patel, who is currently starring in Bait. That's on Prime
Video. Is that getting huge reviews?
I hear great things. I hear great things about it.
So you're excited. Tell me why you're excited.
Okay. First of all, X-Files is really, honestly, a seminal piece of TV property.
But do we need to reboot it?
Well, it's not that we need to reboot it, but like the things that it talks about, the idea of like, you know, government overreach, the idea of like conspiracy, the idea of, you know, secret cabals controlling the world, etc., etc. I feel that's more relevant now than it's ever been.
Okay.
And like there is an element of like kind of vindication of, you know, like it's not about, you know, that there is something out there and stuff like that. I feel like there is a lot of vindication for it. So it feels like it has become relevant again.
They're not going to be playing, by the way, Mulder and Scully. There's going to be two new characters completely.
Right, watch this space.
Yeah.
That's all we've time for, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for all of that, Serena, Brian and Leslie.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.